an Osho talk. Dogen, the Zen Master, a search and a fulfillment. Talks on Zen, number one.
Dogen wrote, "To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. To be enlightened by all things is to remove the barriers between oneself and others. Then there is no trace of enlightenment, though enlightenment itself continues into one's daily life endlessly. The first time we seek the law, we are far away from the border of it, but soon after the law has been correctly transmitted to us, we are enlightened persons."
Manisa, this is the first day of a new series of talks devoted to the full moon. The moon is an ancient symbol of transforming hot rays of sun into cool, peaceful, beautiful rays. It has nothing of its own. When you see the moon, you are seeing only a mirror which is reflecting the rays of the sun. Those reflected rays are just like you can see the sun reflected in the river. Moon is a mirror, but not only a mirror, it is also a transforming agency. It changes the heat rays into cool peacefulness. That is the reason why the moon has become the most significant symbol in the East. This series is dedicated to the full moon. In the series itself, we are going to discuss one of the most unique master Dzogchen. Before I enter into the sutras of Dzogchen, it will be good for you to know something about Dzogchen. That background will help you to understand his very condensed sutras. apparently they look contradictory. Without the background of Dzogchen's life pattern, they are like trees without roots. They cannot bring flowers. So first I will talk about Dzogchen's life structure. Dzogchen was born into an aristocratic family in Kyoto, 1200 years before. His father was a high-ranking government minister, and he himself was a uniquely intelligent child. It is said that he began to read Chinese poetry at the age 4. Another Mozart. Chinese is perhaps the most difficult language in the world because it has no alphabets. It is pictorial, and to read it means years of hard work to remember those symbols. To the born Chinese, it is not so difficult, because from the very birth it becomes ingrained into his mind. But anybody who is studying Chinese from the outside world, I have been told, my friends, that 10 years at least, if one works strenuously, 30 years if one works the way any ordinary student will work. At the age of 4, to understand Chinese, and not only Chinese but Chinese poetry, that makes it even more difficult. Because to understand the prose of any language is simple. But the poetry has wings. It flies to far away places. Prose is very marketplace. Very earthly. It creeps on the earth. Poetry flies. What the prose cannot say, the poetry can manage to indicate it. The prose is connected with your mind. The poetry is more connected with your heart. It is more like love than like logic. At the age of 4, Dzogchen's understanding Chinese poetry immediately declares that he is not going to be an ordinary human being. From that very age, his behavior was not of a mediocre child. He behaved like a Buddha. So serene, so graceful, not interested in the toys at the time. All children are interested in toys, teddy bears. Who cares about poetry? But fortunately or unfortunately, his father died when he was only 7 years old, and his mother died. Dzogchen used to say later on to his disciples, when he became a master, full-fledged in his own right, that everybody thought it was a misfortune. What will happen to this beautiful, intelligent child? But in my deepest heart I felt it is an opportunity. Now there is no barrier. Modern psychologists will perhaps understand it, that in a very psychological way, even you may be grown up 50, 60, 70, your father and mother, they may be dead, still dominate you. If you silently listen to your voices within, you can track out that this voice comes from my father, or from my mother, or from my uncle, or from my teacher, or from the priest. Dzogchen used to say that it was a great opportunity that both who could have distracted me, who loved me, and I loved them, and that was the danger. At the right time they died, and I am infinitely grateful to them, just because they died at the right time without destroying. It is something very strange to understand for a 7-year-old child. It has been discovered only now by the psychologists that man's greatest barrier are the father, the mother. And if you want to be totally free consciousness, you have to drop somewhere on the way your teddy bears, your toys. The teachings that have been forced upon you, they have all been of good intent. There is no question about it. But as it is said in an ancient proverb, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. Just good intention is not enough. What is needed is a conscious intention, which is very rare to find a father and mother with a conscious meditative energy is just hoping for the hopeless. As the father and mother died, the most significant Buddhist scripture, Abhidharma, the essence of religion, Dzogchen was translating it from Chinese into Japanese. He showed every sign of a tremendous future, and when his father and mother both died at the age of 7, the first thing he did, which is unbelievable, he became a sannyasi. Even the neighbors, relatives, could not conceive. And Dzogchen said that, "I will not miss this opportunity. Perhaps if my father and mother were alive, I may not have left the world in search of truth." He became a sannyasin and started searching for the master. There are two kinds of seeker who become interested in truth. One starts looking for scriptures. He will become a great intellectual, he may become a giant, but inside there will be darkness. All light is borrowed, and a borrowed light is not going to help in the real crisis of life. I am reminded of a Christian priest who used to repeat in his every sermon, Christ saying that if somebody slaps you on one cheek, give him the other two. And everybody liked his sermons. He was quoting such great statements. But in one place, a man really stood up and slapped the priest on his one cheek. The priest was shocked because he was just quoting Jesus. But anyway, to save his face, he gave his another cheek, and that man must have been a real rebellious type. He slapped on the other two. Now this was too much. The priest jumped over the man and started beating him. And the man said, "What are you doing?" He said, The scripture stops with the second chief. Now I am here and you are here. Let us decide. Borrowed scriptures won't help in actual encounters. And in life there are everyday realities to be faced, and in death the ultimate reality has to be faced. Borrowed knowledge is not going to help at all. The second type of seeker does not go towards the scriptures, but starts searching for a master. These are two different dimensions. One is looking for knowledge, another is looking for a source which is still alive. One is looking for dead scriptures, another is looking for a living scripture whose heart is still beating and dancing, in whose eyes you can still look the depth, in whose presence you can see your own potential. This second type is authentically the seeker for truth. The first type is only seeker for knowledge. But you can have tons of knowledge and still you will remain ignorant. And the man who has found the master may have to drop all his knowledge so that he can become open and vulnerable to the master's presence, so that he can dance with the master's heart. In this dance, there happens a synchronicity. Both the hearts slowly settle into a same rhythm. This rhythm is called the transmission. Nothing visible is given, no teaching, no doctrine. But invisibly, two hearts have started dancing in the same tune. All that the master knows is slowly goes on this invisible track and pours the hearts of the disciples to the point of overflowing. Dogen shows his intelligence certainly that he never went for the scriptures. While his father and mother were alive, he was translating Abhidharma, one of the most important Buddhist scriptures, from Chinese into Japanese. If the parents had lived, perhaps he may have become a great scholar. As the parents died, he burned all that he has translated with that scripture Abhidharma. A 7-year-old child, it is so unbelievable the great insight that words won't quench my thirst, I have to go in search of a living source, of someone who has known not by words but by actual experience, one who is existentially a Buddha. The search for the Master is the search for the Buddha. At the age of 13, Dzogchen was formally initiated because it was not easy to be initiated. One has to prove one's capacity, potentiality, possibility. One has to prove that one will not betray on the path, that one will not waste the time of the Master, that one will wait infinitely. So he has to wait up to the age 13. And then he was formally initiated into the monkhood on Mount He, the center of Tendai Buddhist learning in Japan. For the next several years, he studied all the schools of Mahayana and Hinayana, versions of Buddhism under the guidance of his teacher, Abbot Coen. By the time he was 14, Dzogchen had become troubled by a deep doubt concerning one aspect of the Buddhist teaching. This is the sutra that made him troubled to the very core of his being. If, as the sutras say, all human beings are endowed with the Buddha nature, why is it that one must train oneself so strenuously to realize that Buddha nature to attain enlightenment? A very significant question. If everybody is a Buddha, then to recognize it should be the simplest thing in the world. If you are potentially a Buddha, then the barriers cannot be much. They cannot hinder you. Nothing can hinder you. A rose bush brings roses. A lotus seed brings the lotus. If every man is a seed Buddha, then why so much discipline? and he was only 14 years of age, and just 1 year before he has been initiated. But this sutra disturbed him immensely. It is obvious that if to be Buddha is our nature, then it should be the simplest thing, without any discipline, without any effort, just a natural phenomenon, as you breathe, as your heart beats, as your blood runs in the body. There is no need of all the nonsense that has been forced upon people to become Buddhas, to achieve Buddhahood. At this point, he left his teacher because the teacher could not answer it. The teacher was just a teacher. He could teach the sutras, but he could not answer. He could realize the great potential of the question. Either Buddhahood is not everybody's nature, it is some far away mountain top that you have to travel through all kinds of hardships. But if it is your very nature, then this very moment you can realize it. There is no need even to wait for a single moment. But the teacher could not say that, because he himself has not realized Buddhahood. He has been teaching Buddha scriptures, and not a single student have ever asked that this sutra is contradictory. In search for someone who could help rid him of his doubt, Dogen found himself with another teacher, Myozen. Teachers are many. Just to graduate into a certain branch of knowledge is not anything unique or special. But to find a master is really arduous, in the sense that they both speak the same language. The teacher, the master, and sometimes it may be the teacher speaks more clearly, because he is not worried about his own experience. The master speaks hesitantly, because he knows whatever he is saying is not appropriate. It expresses the experience itself, that it is a little way off. The teacher can speak with full confidence because he knows nothing. The master either remains silent, or if he speaks, he speaks with a great responsibility, knowing that he is going to come across contradictions which appear to be contradictory, but they are not. But every teacher wants to be known as a master. For the seeker, it creates a problem. Mayozen also proclaimed himself a master, but time proved that he was not a master. In spite of long years of training under Mayozen, Dzogchen still felt unfulfilled. At the age of 23, he decided to make the journey to China with Mayozen in order to study Zen Buddhism further. Leaving the ship, Dzogchen found his way to Tien Tung Monastery, where he trained under Master Wu Chi. Still unsatisfied, for the next several months he visited numerous monasteries. Just as he was about to give up his search and return to Japan, he happened to hear that the former abbot of Tien Tung had died and that his successor, Zhu Qing, was said to be one of China's finest Zen masters. He stopped going back to Japan and went again to the same monastery where he has been. But the old master was dead, who was just a teacher. And he was succeeded by Zhu Qing. A man who has soared high and touched the peaks of consciousness, who has dived deep and touched the depths of his being, who has moved vertically upwards and downwards, who has traveled through all over his conscious territory, this man Zhu Qing proved a man who answered the doubts, settled them, because Dzogchen was still carrying the same problem that if Buddhahood is your nature, then why any discipline is needed? It was Zhu Qing who said no discipline is needed. No discipline, nowhere to go, no way to be traveled, just be silent, settled, at the very center of your being, and you are a Buddha. You are missing it because you are finding and trying everywhere else except within you. You will never find your Buddhahood by changing this monastery to another monastery, this master to another master. Go in. Juching is known as one of the finest masters, a very fine soul that cuts things immediately. His presence, his fragrance, his grace, and Dzogchen remained with him, never asking a question, just drinking the very presence of the Master, the very atmosphere, the very climate, getting sun. And the moment always comes an ancient Tibetan proverb says, if the disciple is ready, the master appears. The whole question is of the disciple being ready. But the disciple can be ready only if he comes across a man of consciousness, not a man only of words, but a man of the experience who has been to the highest peak, to the lowest depth, and just being close to him, one can feel the vibe, the coolness. He radiates the truth. And if you are ready, suddenly something clicks. All doubts disappear. You know you have found the Master. Now there is nothing to be asked. Whatever is needed, the Master will give it. In fact, it is only the poverty of language that we say the Master will give it. The truth is, when you are ready, it simply sours on you. The Master cannot prevent it even. The Master is already radiating, just your doors of the being are closed. So those vibrations, and they are simply vibrations, return back. If the doors are open, nothing is said and everything is understood. When Dzogchen became a master in his own right, when Zhu Qing declared him that now no more play the role of being a disciple, exactly he hit Dzogchen and said that you have come to understand, now be compassionate on the blind humanity. Now don't go on sitting by my side. You are a Buddha. Just because you were wandering here and there, you could not understand. Sitting by my side silently, I have not given you anything. You have simply been centered. And in this centering is the inner revolution. Dzogchen wrote, to steady the way is to steady the self. Now these are tremendously valuable statements. He is saying, don't ask about the way. There is no way. To steady the way is to steady the self. The way leads away. And the farther you go in search, the more you are lost. Drop all going and remain at home. Just doing nothing, as Basso has said, ancient pond. A frog jumps and great silence. And Basso was just sitting there, so he wrote a small poem, sitting silently, doing nothing. A frog jumps in the ancient pond. A little sound, and then great silence. We are little sounds in a great silence. Between us and the universe, there is not much difference than between a sound and silence. In every temple in the East, we have used different kinds of bells. Even today they are used without any understanding. The reason was to give you a message that you ring the bell, a sound is created from nowhere. It echoes in the empty temple, it re-echoes, and every echo becomes more silent, and finally it disappears. Our existence is nothing but a sound in an immense ocean of silence. To steady the way is to steady the self. Don't bother about the way, just steady yourself. To steady the self is to forget the self. Who is going to study the self? The one who is going to study the self has already dropped the self. The one who is studying the self is the witness. Your real self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. Then it does not matter in what situation you are. Any situation will make you enlightened. People have become enlightened in all kinds of situations you can imagine. The question is, if the self is dropped, then you may be chopping wood or carrying water from the well. It does not matter. The moment there is no self, only a witnessing, a silent watchfulness, you are enlightened by all things. To be enlightened by all things is to remove the barriers between oneself and others. To be enlightened simply means neither I exist nor you exist. What exists is something transcendental to I and thou. Something more, something bigger and higher. Then there is no trace of enlightenment. In such a small passage he has condensed so much. Each sentence could have become a scripture. Then there is no trace of enlightenment, though enlightenment itself continues into one's daily life endlessly. Once you have become enlightened, it is not that every day you have to remember that you are enlightened, that every morning, shaving before the mirror, you have to remember that you are enlightened. Are going to the market, you have to remember not to behave against enlightenment. Once you have become enlightened, your every act is automatically of awareness, of consciousness. Soon you forget all about enlightenment because it has become your very body, your very bones, your very blood, your marrow. It has become your very being. Now there is no need to remember it. There have been masters who had forgotten completely that they are enlightened. Because there is no need to remember it. Their masters have hit them on their head this Zenistic came into existence for a very certain purposes. One of the purposes was that somebody who has become enlightened and is still sitting silently has to be hit, to be made aware that now go away, get on. Pick up your rented bicycle. What are you doing here? Enlightenment does not happen twice. Once is enough. The master hits as a reward to remind you that now there is no need to be near me. There are beautiful stories. Mahakashyapa became enlightened. And he will not come even near to Buddha. He used to sit far away under a tree. For years he has been meditating there. He became enlightened. Now he was afraid to come close to Buddha because he will recognize. Buddha himself has to walk towards Mahakashyapa and said, Mahakashyapa, don't try to deceive me. Now there is no need to sit under this tree. Get on and move. There are millions of people who are still groping in darkness. And you are sitting here enlightened. Take this fire of your enlightenment and make as many people aflame as possible. Mahakashyapa had tears. He said, I have been hiding. Who told you? I knew that now this difficulty has happened. I am enlightened. I cannot go near to you. I want to touch your feet. But I touch your feet just from far away under the tree, make the gesture of touching your feet, because I know once you are enlightened, you will be sent away. Another disciple of Gautam Buddha, Sariputta, made it a condition. When he took initiation, he was already a well-known, very famous scholar of his times. He made it a condition that if by chance I become enlightened, please don't send me away. I want to remain by your side. If enlightenment means that I will have to go away, I will not become enlightened. So it is up to you. Buddha said, don't be worried. First become enlightened. Then we will see. He said, no, I want it as a promise. Enlightenment is certain by your side. And if you don't give me promise, you will be the barrier of my enlightenment. Buddha said, you are putting me into difficulty. If everybody starts saying that don't send us away, how I am going to manage? Already 10,000 sannyasins were moving with him from one village to another village. He said, Sariputra, you are such a great scholar, you should understand the responsibility, because enlightenment is not only enlightenment, it is also a great responsibility. You have come to realize the ultimate peace, the joy, the blissfulness. Now it is your responsibility to share it. Go as far away as possible. Now there is no point in sitting by the side of the Master. Then there is no trace of enlightenment. Though enlightenment itself continues into one's daily life endlessly. The first time we see the law, by law is meant the ultimate law of existence. We are far away from the border of it, but soon after the law has been correctly transmitted to us. I have explained you what transmission is. It is not through words. It is through the prisons. It is being close in trust, in love, that something jumps from the Master's inner being and makes you a flame. It is a quantum leap of consciousness. It is almost like two candles, one is lit, another is unlit. If you bring both the candles closer, there will come a moment when the flame of the lit candle will take a jump. You can see the jump, and the unlit candle also becomes lit. And the lit candle does not lose anything. The unlit candle was carrying the possibility, the potentiality. Just it needed an opportunity. The Master is the opportunity. The first time we seek the law, we are far away from the border of it, but soon after the law has been correctly transmitted, we are enlightened persons. Everybody is a Buddha, either awake or asleep. Only this is small distinction. Otherwise, there is no lower or higher. There is nothing wrong in being a sleeping Buddha. It is your choice. A little more sleep is not going to harm anybody. Just don't snore. Because that will create disturbance into other people's sleep. A Catholic priest was in great difficulty because an old, richest man of the church, of his congregation, used to sit in front of him, and he used to come with a small child, a grandchild, and the old man from the very beginning, as the sermon will start, he will start snoring. It was such a disturbance to the priest, but the man was rich and he was donating to the congregation and to the church so much that he cannot be interfered. But somehow it has to be stopped, otherwise sooner or later everybody will be sleeping, snoring, and I will be preaching to them. This disease has to be stopped. He tried to find a way. He pulled the little child out when they were leaving and told him, "Can you do something for God's sake?" He said, "I never do anything without money." I don't know God or God's sake, just money. A real businessman's son, the Catholic priest said, "Okay, I will give you $25 if you keep your old man waking up. Whenever he snores, wake him up, just hit him by your knee." He said, "Advance." Because I don't do anything without advance. And if my old man comes to know there is going to be trouble, so better give me advance first. I am taking a risky job. The bishop has to give him $25. The next Sunday morning, when the old man started snoring, the little boy will hit him again and again and wake him up. He said, "What happened to you? You used to sit silently. You have been coming with me always." He said, "It is a business matter." The old man said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I am getting $25 to keep you awake." The old man said, "That's simple. I will give you $0.50 to let me sleep." He said, "Okay, advance." The preacher could not believe, because he could hear just in his front the transmission was happening. The old man gave him $0.50 and the boy stopped waking him up The preacher made many signs to the boy that just do something, but the boy closed his eyes as if he is in great meditation. After the church, the priest caught hold of the boy that you are very cunning. You have taken in advance and half of the sermon you were trying perfectly well, then why you started behaving in such a way as if you are meditating? For years I have been seeing you, you have never closed your eyes. He said, you don't see, business is business. He said, what do you mean? He said, the old man has given me half a dollar. Naturally, I had to stop. Now, if you are ready for $1, then next Sunday. But it is always a risk. The old man may give me $2. The priest thought that this is a difficult thing for a poor priest. The rise of the price will go on because that old man is rich, he can give anything. He thought better to talk to the old man and said to the old man that, I don't object to your sleep, because sleep is not according to the holy scriptures a sin. You can sleep, but snoring, that too is not sin according to any holy scripture. But it interferes with other sleepers. And to interfere into somebody else's life is certainly immoral. There are many others who are sleeping, I know, but who comes to the church, people who are utterly tired, come to the church to have at least a good morning sleep. You are disturbing them, and this boy is going to prove a great businessman. He has already managed. He asked for advance. The old man said, there is no point in getting into competition, because whatever happens, whatever price has to be given, I will give. But for God's sake, let me sleep and I am going to snore. It is my birthright. This much is the difference between your essential Buddhahood and your snoring Buddhahood. Just give a good shake. You will be surprised to know that there used to be two groups of Christians. One was called Quakers and another were called Shakers. in their chairs, the Quakers quake just to keep them awake, and the Shakers shake just to keep them awake. I think those two schools which had become out of date were the most essential part of any religion. Christianity is poor because those two essential schools, it is perfectly right if you can by shaking help to wake up your Buddha. What is wrong? What you are doing in the dynamic meditation? It is just a mix-up of shaking and quaking. Soon you will be entering in our every evening's meeting and you will see that nobody ever has disturbed the sleep, not only of himself, but miles around. Nobody can sleep. We are determined to make everybody a Buddha. Manisha has asked to forget the self, to remember the self. Are these two different paths? Are some way, are they the same? They are the same, just different expressions. One can say the same thing positively, one can say the same thing negatively. But they both are saying the same. Remembering the self will disappear. The more you remember, the more you will find it is not there. Forgetting the self is the same. You are beyond yourself. Don't cling to your I, to your ego, to your personality. Just drop clinging to this cage and move out of the cage and the whole sky is yours. Open your wings and fly across the sun like an eagle. In the inner sky, in the inner world, freedom is the highest value. Everything else is secondary. Blissfulness, ecstasy. There are thousands of flowers, unaccountable, but they all become possible in the climate of freedom. Before we enter into our meditation, I have to wake up all those who have fallen asleep by now. Dodo Iski and Nurdaski are sitting in the local jail, charged with disturbing the peace and being drunk and disorderly. That afternoon, Sergeant Krep Iski takes the boys to a big field to do some civic duty work. While they serve their time, okay, says the cop, Like I told you guys before, you can start digging that trench. The officer gives a shovel to each of them, points vaguely out at the 10-acre lot, and then walks away. Nurdaski looks around for a while, then turning to Dodoisky, says, "Dig? What trench? I don't see any trench." "Do any of you see?" Nurdaski is out of work, so he goes up to Beverly Hills. He goes around from mansion to mansion, offering to do odd jobs. Finally, at one huge estate, Nurdaski knocks on the door. "Got any work you need doing?" he asks. "What can you do?" asks the owner. "I am a really good painter," replies Nurdaski. "Great," says the man, handing him a can of green paint. "You can go round the back and paint the porch green. It is pretty big, so it will probably take you all day." But 2 hours later, Nurdaski knocks again at the front door. "I have finished that porch," he tells the owner. "Wow," says the man, "that was really fast." "No problem for me," says Nurdaski proudly. "I am a professional." "Okay," says the man, "here is your money." "Thanks," says Nurdaski and turns to leave. "But by the way," he adds, "that is not a porch, it is a Ferrari." Kovaleski is on holiday in a small town in the Italian Alps. After a few lonely nights, he begins to feel the need for a woman. So he asks the local bartender how to find the ladies of the town. "We gotta no prostitutes," replies the bartender. "The priesta would never allow it. But the thinga you want is a kept out of sight." "What have I got to do?" asks Kovaleski. The bartender explains that up in the mountains there are caves. "Go there after darka," he says, "and shouta, you who, into the cave, and if the lady calls back, you who, you work out at the price. If she is busy, you get no answer." So the night Kovaleski you who's his way from cave to cave, but with no luck. Finally he decides to go back to the town to get drunk, but at the bottom of the mountain he finds a cave that he has not seen before. "Yoo-hoo! Yoo-hoo!" he shouts. "Yoo-hoo! Yoo-hoo!" comes back the clear reply. So Kovaleski rushes into the cave and is knocked flat by a train. Jimmy is lost in the desert with two friends, Billy and Sammy, they wander around for 2 days, almost dying of thirst, until they come to a nunnery. They knock on the door and the Mother Superior answers, "Water? Water? Please give us water." They groan. "Ah, no," says the nun. "We had a man in here before. If you want to come in here for water, you have to let us cut off your pricks." The three guys run back out into the desert, but 2 days later they figure that they will die anyway. So what the hell? They go back to the nandi and say that they accept the condition. They are brought in and the head nun takes Billy into another room. There is a sharp scream and then the nun comes back for Sammy. She takes him into another room and there is another longer drawn out scream. But when she comes back for Jimmy, he is terrified. "Just a minute," he cries. "How did you cut their pricks off?" "Simple," says the nun. "We ask them what their profession is. The first guy is a butcher, so we cut it off with a knife. The second guy is a carpenter, so we sawed it off." At this point, Jimmy starts laughing hysterically, with tears rolling down his cheeks. "What is so funny?" ask the nun. "You are gonna have trouble with me," laughs Jimmy. "I work for quality ice cream." Everybody is awake. Nivedano. Feel as if you are frozen. Enter in. The deeper you can, the more you will experience your Buddha nature. At the deepest point, you are the ultimate reality. immortal, eternal, with all the blessings that you can ever conceive of. Don't miss the opportunity. It is the simplest thing in the world to go in. Because it is your own home, you need not even knock on the doors. In fact, there are no doors inside. It is an open space, an open sky. But to know this open sky is to realize the deathless principle of your existence. Deeper, deeper, and deeper. Drink this life juice to your heart's content. And remember this peace, this silence, this blissfulness, around the day, whatever you are doing, don't forget it. Like an undercurrent, let it remain there, and slowly, slowly it will change your whole life structure. To make it more clear, sharply clear, Nivedano, you relax. Let go, as if you have died. One day you will. This is just a rehearsal. Leave the body, forget the mind, and move as deep as you can, like an arrow fast hitting the very center. This is the Buddha. Vedana. Come back, but come back as Buddhas, knowing perfectly your eternal being. Just sit down for a few seconds to recollect the memory of the territory that you have traveled, of the center that you have touched. Let it become your breathing. Let it become your heartbeat. To be a Buddha is so simple that you don't have to go anywhere. You have to just stop going anywhere and just being within yourself. Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes.